Welcome to Black Hollywood Live on, welcome to BHL Geek Nerd Tech. Today, you can climb Mount Everest on your Oculus Rift and the Grammys blow up Twitter and streaming. Let's go.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Live's Geek Nerd Tech.
Yo, welcome to Geek Nerd Tech, the show we break down tech news, nerd culture from a black and brown geek perspective. This is a Grammy award winning artist, Chance the Rapper.
Yeah, Chance, man.
Yes. I'm Joe Braswell. I'm joined as always by my man, Akili Shine. How you doing?
Akili Shine's in the building. I'm good, man. Well, how about yourself?
I'm good. Chance.
Yeah, man.
Grammy, like independent. Independent yeah. artist. Did it his way. Absolutely. Like Frank Sinatra.
Absolutely.
Like
Trump.
Like Trump.
Like your boy.
Like my boy. My boy, Donald T.
Agent Orange.
Agent Orange. Yeah, let's talk about with the Grammys. I want to get to that and also get to some tech news. And I want to talk a little bit about John Wick, which I saw last night. But first, oh, please. Don't even act like John Wick ain't.
I didn't say a word. Okay. I literally just fell asleep.
Man, oh, man. I can't believe your lack of enthusiasm for John Wick.
Oh, man.
I can't. Yeah. It's blowing my mind.
Let's go.
Your lack of enthusiasm for John Wick. That movie is on point. Anyway, but a lot of tech news to get to as well. But I do want to say just yeah, Chance though. I mean, I just you know, what a journey. Like what a journey to be able to do it. Like I said, his way independently. Like no real album. Technically, you know. I mean, I guess it comes an album, but it didn't release it as an album.
Yes, they did.
Was it? I thought it was uh-huh. technically like a mixtape. Oh, I'm mixing uh-huh. that up. Wait, never mind. I'm mixing that up. Never mind. You're right. It was a full album, but I thought they were calling it a mixtape, but I'm mixing that up. Anyway, my point is, it doesn't matter. You know, all that sort of groundswell promotion, like you know, Twix commercials, everything. Like he's yeah. the hottest dude out around, and everybody wants him in the president's President Obama's playlist.
Absolutely.
And now Grammy award-winning guy.
I mean, you got to think, man. The perfect alignment of gospel and hip hop. Never really seen that before in hip hop done so well. And I think just being in the right place in the right time, having the right alliances. I mean, having Kanye, having Jay-Z, having yeah. all these people, being from Chicago. I mean, especially with the tumultuous times of Chicago and having this type of music being birthed from that city. Like, I think all those things happening synergistically, like, help propel him to where he is. And also having that dope track with Kanye on his album. Ultra Light Beam.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that was the perfect setup
yeah.
for him.
Yeah.
You know, the walk in with his album. So,
which Kanye got so much credit for that song, which is an amazing song. But Chance, you know, he killed it on that. Yeah. Like, he's like 50% of that song for
exactly.
me. And also like that great performance on SNL, which kind of yeah. like you know introduced him, you know, to the world in that way.
Right.
Anyway, lots to discuss. I want to get into something I've been waiting for and thinking about, and I really want to try this, but it just seems like I don't quite understand if it's going to work. But Kavo is a company that has this new set-top box. We've been talking about cord cutting and all the things that are happening, like with all these different devices, your Xbox, your Apple TV, your VCR, your Blu-ray.
You still got the VCR plugged up. I saw it at your crib.
I got the double decker.
Exactly.
I'm dumb it. But there's this new box and it, by Kavo, and it lets you hook up has eight USB inputs in the back. You allegedly can hook all your shit up to this, and then through one cool remote and one interface, have all of your set-top boxes.
I thought it was HDMI.
That's what I meant. What did I say?
You said USB.
Oh, man.
Okay, it's all good, man. Oh, it's all good.
HDMI.
I'm sorry, USB. All right, cool.
It's got hard drive. It's got eight coax cables. Screw them in. No. It's got eight HDMI cables, and it seems to be amazing. The only thing I don't quite understand about this, and it reminds me of like the kind of the early days of TiVo, when TiVo's like, we have a set-top box going to revolutionize everything, and they did, and they hung out from there for a long time. The only thing I don't quite understand about this is, it's $400.
Man, it's out of control. This is ridiculous.
$400?
Number one, the price point is ridiculous.
Am I wrong about that?
No one's going to buy that. And then two, okay, like, how is this? So they're not offering any content. They're not offering any apps. It's essentially a hardware device where you plug in your other devices. So I get it, having a centralized place where you can access your content, but isn't that what Apple TV does? Of course, yeah, you can't get Amazon stuff on Apple TV. So, okay, so then you have your Fire Stick. Great, so you have two devices. Is it really that big of a deal, though? Like,
yeah.
And so I feel like it's not. I mean, if you want to watch your series and binge watch on Amazon, then that's the time that you'll watch it. Like, you're saving 5 seconds to go from your Chrome stick or your Fire stick to your Apple TV. Big deal.
Okay,
it's not worth $400
for me. Like, I think it looks beautiful. We had it up there for a second. I think it looks beautiful. It's a beautiful like set top box. I love it. I like to love the way it looks. I personally have all this.
Yeah.
So I am. I mean, look, I am going from Apple TV to dropping the Apple TV remote, picking up the TV remote, going input.
How laborious. How laborious.
Dropping that, picking up my Xbox controller to go to Amazon. That, I mean, it is a little laborious. I mean, like, it's not the end of the world. It takes me, 5 seconds to do that? But, I mean, I got a controller all on the couch.
I highly doubt that you're watching that much content on Amazon, number one.
Most of them these days.
If we were able to get statistics of your TV viewing habits and what you watch in terms of Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, or whatever else, you mean to tell me Amazon is top number one?
Amazon's not top, but I'm watching more Amazon than you think. Because I'm watching the Top Gear show. I'm watching Sneaky Pete. I like Amazon, but you're right. Your point's taken.
But the point is, like, okay, so
my Amazon and Netflix are pretty close. I will tell you that.
But it's not a big deal to switch over.
You're right.
Like, I mean, if it was like $30, okay, let's go.
$400. It feels like $100 max, but $400. What am I paying for? Like, I guess I just got to see the interface. I think about TiVo, because the interface on TiVo was actually dope, and it still is, and the remote was dope, and it just made me feel like I get that. But
I think,
like,
you're paying for the searchability. You're able to search for a particular content and it'll pull it up very seamlessly. So if you do want to watch a show on Amazon, you just say it and then it'll pull it up.
Right.
And so I think that part is cool. But okay.
Do I have to say Amazon though? Can I just say
say the title of the show.
And it'll find it through all my things.
Exactly.
Now that's something.
Right.
Okay.
But that's what Apple TV already does. It just doesn't do it for everything.
Yeah, Apple TV
does. Fire Stick does the same thing. Like, you could speak it to your remote. Whatever. I mean,
you have these three competing technologies now with Siri, Alexa, and Google Assistant, and having all three of those boxes, Alexa, Google, Siri, like, to be able to just say one thing to one command to one device.
That's great in theory, not worth $400.
I agree. So, but maybe when the price point comes down, but it is interesting.
Oh, and my last point about it, which I do think is good, is that they're able to offer, this information, this data analytics for a Netflix, for a Hulu, for Amazon, in terms of, like, say I'm in the Amazon ecosystem and I watch a show and then I leave out of the ecosystem and I go to watch something else.
Right.
Amazon wants to know, well, what am I leaving for? What am I leaving to go watch? So how can I keep you in the ecosystem? So what content can I offer you to keep you locked in? And so this device could theoretically offer that to these companies that pay information, like, hey, this is why people are leaving your app.
Because they're going to the shit you don't got. It's what you don't have that they're looking for.
Exactly.
That's a great point. That's a great point for the company.
Right.
Not necessarily for the consumer.
Right.
But I think that to make it more, I mean, putting it in a nice wood grain top box is not enough to get to charge me the extra $300.
Get out of here.
I think it's worth. You said 30. I said 100. You said 30.
I just took away like 75% of the margins.
Okay, maybe in China we'll find one for $30. So NASA had a bit of a problem. Looks like that they were they had a bunch of was it a hack, and it was a climate change data about to be deleted, and they banded together 200 coders and hackers in a giant room, and they just got busy and saved everything. Is this sounds like a movie? Is this right? Did I get this right?
I mean, it's you're pretty much there. I mean, I think it's falling under the Trump administration and them trying to privatize public information or keep it hidden from us, especially information that speaks about global warming and climate change and just environmental issues that maybe aren't in alignment with the Trump administration's objectives. And so I think that what they've done is they're able to retrieve this information and then archive it so that it's still accessible for public consumption. I think that's what it is. But it's dope because all these coders and hackers are using their skills and coming together as a collective force to be able to tap into something that's already been pulled from, the NASA server or the NASA website.
So do you think that... So this is what we see... allegedly in Russia and China, supposedly. I mean, allegedly.
Rooms of people?
Exactly. Let's say China has like rooms of like 200, 300, you know, 400 coders in a giant room just hacking, you know, and Russia's got the same thing, allegedly. They got rooms of 100 plus people. All they do is hack. I don't think that we have that here. We may or we might. But, you know, you have the NSA or CIA. But, like, this just shows what the power of that group think could do. And, you know, I mean, maybe this is a new way of, you know, of security for us. You know, I don't know. I feel like that we're getting towards that fight fire with fire because, and the intel is there. I mean, and Russia and China are both. China for sure is doing it.
Yeah.
So, we'll see. Qantas flights, which I have not flown on Qantas yet because I have not been to Australia yet or New Zealand. But they're going to be able to let you watch Netflix on your flight, which I think is a big thing. I mean, I think, you know, it seems like a no-brainer that someone should have already done this. And why is it Qantas? And why is it taking so long? Because, you know, obviously United has a partnership with NBC. I think it's like JetBlue has one with DirecTV. They all have their own partnerships. Southwest has one with Dish Network. But no one's got to Netflix or Amazon. It doesn't make any sense. So why is Qantas the first person? It just seems like it makes too much sense. I don't know. I think it's a good idea.
I mean, I think it's a good idea too. I don't think it's earth shattering.
No.
Or, you know, I mean, it's just whatever. So I get the fact that I think the thing that's of interest to me is airliners deciding what technology they're going to implement into the planes and to the experience of the passenger. Like, for instance, the Wi-Fi sucks on most of these flights. It's slow.
Right.
Really, your productivity or your entertainment accessibility is kind of already minimized. And so I'd rather them put money into figuring that out, how I can actually work on a flight with not having to troubleshoot stuff because of speed versus having, okay, a screen in my seat. Like, that's whatever. So I like the fact that, yeah, okay, I can stream now on my flight versus, you know, what the movie offering is that they're selecting or whatever partnership that they have. So I like that part, but and I like the fact that, you know, I mean, Qantas, obviously
it's a long flight.
Exactly, it's a long flight. Flight, so you kind of want, you know, that additional entertainment value and to be able to have access to it. However, what Netflix and Spotify are offering is not really attractive. They're offering, you know, a free trial, 30 days. So once you sign up for the trial, say you don't fly for another 6 months, you can't use the trial again.
Right.
You have to actually sign up. And I think that kind of sucks. Like, they should give more incentive. They should incentivize the consumer a little bit better. Like, hey, maybe it's a different price point, or maybe whatever, the trial is extended longer, determining the number of flights that you go on. It's something like that.
Yeah, they should. I agree. It also is great because, you know, like you said, the internet's always crappy. You cannot stream anything. Like, they won't let you stream any kind of movies on with their internet, no matter how powerful the internet is. So this is good that they're finally doing that. But yeah, I feel like that there could be some missed opportunity for both Qantas and Netflix in terms of, like, you know, nabbing more consumers or helping a consumer out. But we'll see. But it's a good start. Before we get to the next story, I want to talk about our friends at Blue Apron. Blue Apron is, of course, the number one delivery and ingredient recipe service in the country. What they do is they not only give you these amazing recipes that you can make yourself, but they also give you the ingredients to make them. They're already pre-portioned, ready to go, easy and fun. It's like going to a restaurant so you can make them yourself. The ingredients are actually super fresh. They're sustainable. The meat's sustainably sourced. It's fantastic. Some of the menus, it allows you to make some food that you would normally not make yourself at home, like cashew chicken stir fry with tango mandarins and jasmine rice, roasted pork with apple, walnut, and farro salad, crispy burramundi with quinoa and roasted carrot salad. All this stuff sounds absolutely delicious. I would never think to make that on my own, but Blue Apron sort of gives you these restaurant quality recipes and ingredients right to your home. But the thing about it is, it's not super expensive. It's actually really cheap, less than $10 per person. So actually cheaper than going to Chipotle or some other place. You get this crazy variety, new menus every week, so you're not making the same things. You can actually customize your recipes based on what you want to do. They're very, very simple and easy to use. I know people who don't cook at all, who swear by Blue Apron, who can actually learn how to cook and learn how to do these recipes on there. And also, their freshness is guaranteed. So if you worry about these things getting shipped to your house, they guarantee that it's going to be fresh and ready to go. Here's how you get started. You can check out This week's menu, you get your first three meals for free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/geek. That's blueapron.com/geek. That's in geek nerd tech. You'll love how it feels, how it tastes. Incredibly home-cooked meals that are restaurant quality, so don't wait. That's blueapron.com/geek. And again, you'll get the first three meals for free with free shipping. No reason to not check it out. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Oculus Rift is still making their moves. They have a new VR thing that allows you to climb Mount Everest, which I think is pretty dope. I think that they talked about, you know, not just having games and not just having things, but having experiences, like, you know, we're used to, which are like sort of digitally created experiences or digitally created, you know, video games. Being able to take users and viewers, which are the same thing, I guess, these days with Oculus, to places they've never been, mm-hmm. like the moon or Mars or space or whatever, in right. a VR thing. I think going to Everest on VR, because I can tell you, I will not summit Everest. I barely summited Whitney. Barely. I will not summit Everest. So I think this is cool. I mean, what do you think?
I think it's definitely cool. I mean, we discussed the applications of virtual reality and it being more than just traditional entertainment, like traditional narrative filmmaking or documenting, but to have something like this, which is more experiential. I mean, you could utilize this in many educational opportunities. Teachers could use this in the classroom with students.
Yep.
You know, the medical industry could use it when they're trying to bring a theory into practice. Like, hey, instead of going to the moon, I can go into your heart and look at it from a different perspective. And
no, that's a good point.
You know what I mean? So I think the ways that you can use this technology is dope. And I love the fact that not only is it just a visceral experience where it's 360, whatever, but you could actually put on gloves and climb up the mountain. You know what I'm saying? So it's interactive. You know, it's not just, okay, I'm looking at it and I'm seeing it, but I'm actually engaging and making choices. I think that part is pretty dope
too. Yeah, which I don't know how, man. I guess it's sort of a mixture of, you know, digital and real and virtual and real. It has to be, because I can't just be, I don't know who that person is. I guess once you get to a certain point, then it switches to the real view. I don't know how that works, but I'm very interested to see that stuff. What did you say? There's nothing else I was gonna say. Oh, you brought up a good point, which is the whole idea of like the medical applications. I never even thought of that. Like, you know, putting a camera down, you know, inside and checking things out, having a VR headset, being able to look around a doctor like in real time, be able to say, oh, that looks like a trouble area right there. Right. Like, that's on some, like, fantastic voyage shit right there.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
I mean, the fact that they're able to capture these things in 8K, 4K, like, even with the Everest VR, like, you could scale up your body. You could be almost as tall as Everest to get that perspective, or you could be as small as an ant.
That's crazy.
Like, and so think about if you could do that in your heart. So I'm in your heart, but now let me get a like, macro experience of what's happening inside one of your ventricles.
Yeah, you can see, like, wow, that's a trip. I never thought about that. That's insane. Well, I mean, yeah, the implications are limitless. And speaking of which, IMAX unveils its flagship virtual reality center right around the corner from my house. I've yet to go. It's like walking distance. Actually, you're familiar with this place because you did some stuff there when it was Samsung. A Samsung joint, right? Mm-hmm. But this
nice space in there.
It seems like a pretty cool spot. I mean, absolutely. So have you been to this one?
No, I haven't been to the IMAX one yet. Not at all, but I mean, the Samsung one, that's right. Been a few times, but I mean, I think this is fresh, and the fact that they're giving you know, consumers and the audience, you know, just options, like, to be able to literally, I mean, kind of what we're just talking about, have experiences that they would never ever be able to have before. And I love the fact that companies are investing to really expand this medium. I think this is the new frontier of storytelling and just how we communicate information. Most of the major networks have their own VR department, and they also have, you know, investment in auxiliary companies that are developing content for them. So to have IMAX as, you know, a company that is known for, you know, clean, great experiences, now you have a place that you can actually have an experiential experience and to be able to consume content, I think is amazing.
Right. I agree. I'm actually going to go check it out as soon as I can, because it looks incredible. I think it's like, obviously the first or whatever, and it's very smart of IMAX to brand that, because, you know, that's kind of their brand, which is experiential stuff. It'll be interesting to see, like, if we can't get more films. Remember that film, this will lead me into John Wick, but what was that movie? No, wasn't there a movie that, like, it was like last April, and it was like Hardcore Harry or something. But the whole thing was like a first person movie, rated R. It was all Hardcore first
Henry.
Hardcore Henry. Thank you, Marissa. Did you see that, Marissa?
I did not, because it looked like it would make me nauseous.
that was the thing. Like, people were walking out barfing and stuff. But like, if you made it, was a first person action movie, a la, like, it felt and looked like a video game, and it was like rated R, so there's a sex scene in it, and there's all kinds of stuff happening in it. But like, but it was giant on a giant screen, so people were freaking out. I wonder if this is the kind of movie that worked better on virtual reality headset. It seems like that'd be amazing.
I think it would be amazing.
You know, absolutely. I wonder. I'm sure that that's available to check out that way. I'd be interested to see if I can find that actually. And then kind of must be out anyway. And then which reminds me of John Wick Part 2, which I want to talk about because I saw that last night. And I thought it was fantastic. I mean, that was fantastic because Keanu's dope and Keanu's Keanu. But one of the things I really noticed about it is it's really, it takes you to that sort of first person, not really first person because it's like, but it's a video game. It's basically watching a video game. It's kill after kill, walking through, going through a bunch of minor bosses to get to the big boss. But something about the way that this isn't new in films that try to replicate video games, but some way about the way they execute this in this way is I don't get tired of it. It's really just kill after kill after kill after kill until he gets to the big kill.
Right.
But I'm riveted. It's just, I think it's the way they shoot it. I think it's the execution of his director guys being two stuntmen that know him. I think it's you know, the gritty reality of the car stuff, the gun stuff, something they created called Gung Fu, which is dope. I'm all in on this, and I think it's just, but it speaks to sort of the culture of how we consume media through the video game culture and how we can watch this, and it's just like a seamless sort of, your brain clicks in a different way.
No, I get it. I get those arguments, and when I was saying boo or I was asleep to this movie, like, right. I'm just playing. Like, I think from an action perspective, action film perspective, I think it's an amazing concept. The first one was dope.
Yep.
From a narrative perspective, though, from, you know, That angle is just like whatever, but I know that that's not the point of it. You know, the point of it is blood, guts, excitement, and figuring out dope cinematic ways to explore that. And so I think that's cool. But if you're going there for the best acting or the best like story structure, you know,
I mean, Keanu says like seven words. I mean, but he does say more words than Jason Bourne did in the last Jason Bourne movie. Matt Damon said like a page of dialogue. So
you're comparing Keanu to Matt Damon now?
I will tell you this. John Wick 2 is way better than Jason Bourne. The last Jason Bourne.
Okay.
I mean, way better. In fact, these last two John Wick movies are better than the last two Bourne movies. And I really like the Aaron Cross one.
Flag of the soil.
I'm telling you, it's a fact. Like, I mean, you know, even Rotten Tomatoes, I think, you know, 90% for this, like 40% for the other one. I mean, like, they're both dope. I mean, he's no accountant. Poor Ben.
So, I obviously haven't seen the movie, so I'll run you some questions. But a lot of the set design, the way this stuff was composed, the composition, the way they're using certain colors and all that stuff, the action sequences, you're saying they're all on point?
I feel like that this is, it is the best realization. And that's the other thing. It's graphic novel, sort of like comic book realization meets anime, like the Matrix did with the kind of bite and Ghost in the Shell, meets video game culture, and it's right. able to use those languages and translate them to cinematic language, which is amazing. The irony is a lot of what the Wachowskis did in the Matrix and sort of creating that new visual language, right. like using Ghost in the Shell as a template, using comic book panels as a template, and then and creating a whole new visual language, which people forget, like the visual language that we see in the Matrix that people have bitten for the last 20 years.
Extremely innovative.
People like don't even know that you didn't see camera angles and shit like that before. So these guys are tripling down on that and also taking everything else we've learned and then applying a lot of the same things that the Wachowskis did, which is to get like these amazing sort of stuntmen and guys who know their craft, and Keanu's doing all of his own, like
stunts,
90% of his own stuff, 90% of his own driving, like, you know, the driving stuff's, you know, we talk about the fighting and the gunplay, but the driving is insane too. So, I mean, it's really remarkable. And I think that, like, I often get worked up about, like, you said, like, now, where's the story, where's this, where's that, and sometimes It's okay to have a story.
I'm just saying that from my personal interest and taste. Like, I like to have, you know, I like to have an experience in film where everything is excellent. I mean, I get there are times where, you know, there's going to be a film that's just about dialogue. Yeah. Like with Fences, there's no action.
Right.
Or a movie like this, John Wick, it's all action. Right. Less of the subtext, less of the relational quality between characters. So, I mean, I get that. Like, each thing has its own place.
I do also, and last thing I'll say, I do like that sort of the hyper-real world. It's kind of remind me of the Warriors a little way. Like, this world that, like, it's grounded in reality, but is there really a world where there's, like, a secret hitman hotel and the hitman
Mad Max-ish?
No, it's more of the Warriors where it's, like, you know, I mean, gangs were horrible and that was bad in 1979, but I don't know that there was, like, you know, armies of gangs roaming like that in 1979 New York. In fact, there's actually a whole sequence in here that reminds me a lot of the Warriors. But anyway, it's great. It's great. I highly recommend it. Let's move on to the Grammys. Oh, just one more thing about Facebook. Facebook is coming for your TV. They're getting out for Amazon, Apple, and Samsung devices. I mean, this is like not necessarily new news. I mean, we knew Facebook was going here. I'm just curious as to like if Facebook is going to get in the hardware business or if they're going to just try to stay in the software business and come out with something that's, you know.
I mean, they're already in the hardware business. They already have Oculus. I mean, it would be an acquisition. I think it would be a mistake if they just came out, hey, the Facebook, you know, TV box.
Exactly.
I think that would be detrimental to the company. But I think it might be like something similar to what they've done with the Oculus. But I think software-wise, I think they're already set up to have a dope app in any one of the, you know, the major players that are developing.
Right.
You know, Amazon or Apple or, I think they would be better, far suited to do that. So.
Yeah, I agree. I want to ask you about, I want to switch gears to the Grammys because the Grammys were amazing. I liked them. Well, let's talk about it. So the Grammys, you know, they were online. The Twitter performance was through the roof. The streaming was normal. Last year I had all kinds of problems streaming through the CBS app. I think it went down at one point. It was a big mess. But this year I had no problems whatsoever. Like I got the whole thing. I streamed the whole thing. No problems. I enjoyed the experience. And they didn't have that. I think they got rid of that third screen experience, which because I didn't see it, where you can watch it from different camera angles and watch the social media reporters report from the Grammys, who were terrible last year. But anyway, I enjoy those. But I'm curious to ask you what you thought of the Grammys just from a show standpoint.
I think from a show standpoint, it was okay.
Assuming you saw it,
okay as a body of work,
as a production.
I think the performances were dope, were awesome. Aside from that, like as a uniformed experience, it's just like the last Grammys or the last three before that. But I think that I love the fact that we are in a climate of protest, and which we've already seen with the Golden Globes, and we probably will see with the Oscars, and we've seen with other award shows that, you know, artists are taking a more vocal stand politically. And so I love seeing those things happen in performance and also happening in accepting awards. I think that Beyonce was dope. Bruno Mars was fantastic.
Bruno Mars.
Adele killed it.
Yep.
Busta Rhymes, Tribe Called Quest destroyed it.
Agent Orange.
Chance the Rapper murdered it.
Murdered it.
Who else am I missing highlight-wise that was just phenomenal? I think there's one more that was from my... I'm drawing a blank, but yeah. What about you, performance-wise?
Your favorite, Pentatonix?
Stop it.
Little Big Town? I'm sorry, Marissa. Actually, I like Little Big Town, Marissa. Do you like them?
I love Little Big Town.
I like Little Big Town, too. I'm not going to lie. Actually, I'm not like I got all their records or nothing, but every time I see them show up at an award show, every time I see them sing and I see the way they roll and how they present themselves or see them being interviewed, I like them a lot. It makes me want to buy their stuff. I've yet to do that, but it makes me want to go check them out.
I suggest you should, because coming from someone who has all their albums, yeah, you should.
Okay.
Mic drop. The Weeknd was dope.
We think about the French Robots, you know, coming out and doing their thing.
Come on, man. How could you hate on them?
Yeah, no, I love that funk. Like, they you know, I thought, oh, that was great. The Weeknd was cool. I just think that Bruno Mars was just, he's so far Man. Ahead of everything that's happening, sort of performance wise.
That dude is all.
He's a beast. Like, he's a killer. I think that Bruno was my favorite. I think second was probably Chance. I think third was Tribe. I think fourth was Adele. I think fifth was Beyonce. You know, I'm not mad at Beyonce at all. She's Beyonce. It's a little, you know, the whole, you know, I'm the goddess, which she is. It's how she rolled out was just a little like. I don't know. I can't say anything bad about it because I thought it was very artfully done and beautifully done and amazingly choreographed and like almost Cirque du Soleil esque, and it was the chair and the whole thing was just beautiful.
And keep in mind, she has two living beings in her belly.
Yes, exactly. And so, which makes me wonder how she's going to do Coachella. I think those babies going to be born before Coachella, right?
I don't think so.
She can't be 9 months pregnant. And just, what's she going to do?
I think she's bringing other artists to help.
That's what I thought too. So. It's going to be like a big
ensemble.
Yeah. But that's my second thought. But God, anyway. So, yeah, man, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed all of it.
I think also, you know, it was great for me to see Solange win her first Grammy.
Yes,
which is also my brother's first Grammy. Troy Johnson, he won his first Grammy.
Oh,
So that was pretty exciting to
I didn't even talk realize him that.
And yeah, and just I mean, he's super happy, obviously. But
I gotta hit him up.
That was his first one, man.
Oh, congratulations, that's Troy Johnson! I gotta text you up. Yeah, I'm a bad person. That's great. Yeah, mm-hmm. that's great. Let's see what else.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's a lot of banter online about Adele winning album of the year.
Oh yeah.
A lot of people think that it should have obviously went to Beyonce in the way that she. I mean, drop Lemonade, how she dropped Lemonade during the Super Bowl, the tour, the videos for every song, just the orchestration, creativity behind it. Do you think that it was a snub? Do you think that Adele deserved it? What's your take on it?
That's an interesting question because I think the Grammys are a sham, you know, for the most part. Grammys are done by the record industry. Like, the voting body of the Grammys aren't on the cutting edge of anything.
Yeah, they're not reflective of the audience.
They're not reflective of the audience. They're not reflective of the time. They're not really necessarily reflective even of, like, the artists that are in the audience.
Right.
These are, like, a bunch of people who are, like, 10 months at best behind the scene. So they weren't in the
cut.
Like
you said, at best.
Yeah, at best. And so, like, this is the same group that it's the whole Kendrick versus your boy Macklemore thing, you know? I mean, when Macklemore won, it's just like, they're going to give the Grammy to who they think is it's almost a popular contest in their mind. Like, who is their? It's like Metallica winning Best Rock.
But
or,
in that case, is it a popularity contest? Who's more popular than Beyonce?
Well, no, I shouldn't put it that way. But they do this all the time. Like, I remember for Best Rock Record, it was like they would give it to, you know, Tom Petty over like all these other great, you know, everyone would get nominated, but they would give it to, like, you know, and it goes to Metallica or it goes to whoever. And it's just, you know, at a certain point, you realize that it's really about. It's just an establishment thing. Now, that to your point, Beyonce is who's bigger than Beyonce, who's more established than Beyonce. But I think that among that audience, if you go Beyonce versus Adele, among those voters, Adele's going to win. They just think Adele is better. And I think the last thing I'll say is I think that recognizing what that album is as a piece of art and what Adele was as a piece of sort of amazing technology and art and all the things that Lemonade was, the Grammys aren't the place to recognize that as that.
What do you think about Adele recognizing Beyonce in the way that
I thought that was dope. Because Adele, again, the audience knows, Adele knows, you know, and I thought that was brilliant for her to just say, you know, like, all my friends, all my black friends, everyone, like, you, what this means to everyone, like, this, like, to her to go on and on and on about that is, like, it's genuine.
Super
like,
dope.
She's, like, super just such a real genuine
jam. Yeah, I mean, you say fuck, start the shit all over.
I know, like, yeah. She's like, I'm sorry, Ken. I'm sorry, everybody. I'm not going to mess this up with them. Right. I'm not going to mess this up for him. Like, that's how much George means to him. But everyone, you know, by all accounts, you know, Adele is, you know, she's, I mean, you know, by British standards, is like a black girl. You know, like, by in a way how she comes up and how she's rolling. She's very, like, not proper at all, you know, so, and where she's from. So that's kind of her whole, I mean, culturally, not obviously not a
headline. Adele's a black girl.
Yeah, no, I just mean it, where she's from in the UK.
I get
who
it.
She's
I get
around
it.
And how she rolls. It. She's more identifies with black culture than she does like white culture. Is what I'm saying. Even though she's white,
I got you, bro.
That's all I'm saying. and if we could tell the difference, how she's speaking is like she sounds like a black person in the UK as opposed to like a white person.
Right.
Anyway, so it makes sense that she's so, you know. She's all about Beyonce. One last question before we get out of here. Go ahead.
Man,
go ahead.
I had another one for you. I think LL, our boy LL, hosted the Grammys
five times in a row.
Exactly. So, what did it feel like not having LL get down and having your boy?
A boy, Corden?
Corden, yeah.
I gotta say, I wasn't mad at the decision. I mean, I thought LL, and I love LL, he had a great run doing it 5 years in a row, and it's a good decision. I mean, like, before Corden, you know, CBS, you look at along the landscape of CBS, you had your boy Neil Patrick Harris, and you had LL.
Right.
Like, who else is gonna do it, exactly. You know? And then it wasn't gonna be Letterman. It wasn't gonna be, like, so they gave it to LL, and I think that was a good choice.
And they gave it to Corden.
No, I mean, but for the 5 years, even though he's a CSI guy, because I thought that was great. I think still he did a music great guy, job. But Corden's Corden now. Like, he's the king right now, and I think that, like, if I'm producing that, I'm giving it to Corden too. Hmm. And I think that Corden, you know, it's weird because he did the Tonys and now the Grammys, but they're both on CBS, so I guess I get that makes sense.
And also, I mean, he actually can sing.
He can sing.
He has musicality. He's hosts, like, he's acting, all of it. He has it all. So
again. I think that, all that being said, I think his job as a host on this one, he didn't do that great. I think he did an amazing job at the Tonys.
Right.
I think I give that to, like, whoever his writing and producing team was. You mentioned the production. I mean, Ken Ulrich, who's been producing the Grammys for the last, I don't know, umpteenth years, and was credited for sort of bringing the Grammys back, who's a legend, who, you know, sort of brought back the mashups and everything else and years ago. I have to say, this year for that stuff, I mean, it's a long in the tooth. It might need, hate to say it, I may be blasphemous, but we might need a new producer for the Grammys.
Or maybe not a new producer, just maybe, you know, step out of the mold and try to push boundaries a little bit more.
Ken is like in his 70s, late 70s. Okay. How many molds can he step out of?
I mean, I don't put
a fresh look.
I don't put an age limitation on your creative ability.
That's true.
Like, I think, I mean, because we don't do that with you. I'm just saying, man. Like, I don't think that it requires necessarily fresh blood to be able to, you know, shift the creative storytelling of the Grammys. I just think that, like, to your point earlier, I think the powers that be, the managers, the organizers, the producers of the Grammys are in an old world mode, and I think they need to adapt to the times.
Yeah, so. I agree. But I've met a coordinate. And last one, I did love the Tribe. I mean, Tribe, just the pure presence of Tribe, man, this was incredible.
I did not expect that.
I mean, and this is,
Bust the Bus.
Seeing Busta Rhymes and Consequence and Q-Tip, well, you know, Q-Tip is the most Hollywoodest dude, though. Like, what are you wearing? But anyway, he's dope. He's a rock star. And then who else? I did want to bring up, because this is, we gotta get out of here, but I do want to bring up the Lil Yachty, Carly Rae Jepsen,
oh my God,
3.5 minute commercial for Target.
Yeah.
The much maligned, much people, some people really loved it, some people really hated it, some people were like, you're selling out, some people like, this is exactly where you need to be. I mean, first of all, it's an interesting pairing. Second of all, I mean, it's Lil Yachty. I mean, you know, I know Lil Yachty's big and he's the dude, but is he the dude? And then they're gonna remake It Takes Two. I thought Mike Will did the beat. I thought Mike Will's beat was okay. I wasn't really horribly mad at it. It was just somewhere around...
It's flat, man.
It was somewhere flat, around the minute and a half mark where they're doing the dances with the shopping carts. I was like, something's off. Bono,
I mean, I like how they try to integrate, you know, technology into the piece with the whole VR headsets and, you know, showing them on the device and going to the TV and shifting back and having all the performance elements. That was cool. I mean, but... It just seemed like they're trying to collide different worlds together, and it's forced.
Yeah.
And I mean, I get it for marketing purposes, like, hey, you're reaching a wide net of audience.
Yeah.
But as a, and I appreciate the attempt of creativity to have this big performance set, but I just felt it was flat. It didn't really resonate with me. Like, I wouldn't mention it in conversation. Like, hey, did you see the Target commercial?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and do you think it was a miscast? Do you think it was, maybe if it was like so and so and so and so?
Maybe.
Are you okay with the choices?
I think
the
pairing,
the song, the pairing's weird.
The pairing could have been better, I think.
Pairing seems forced, right?
Exactly.
And it was also what the Grammys were used to be about, like these mashups, right? Right. And so they tried it. Although they didn't do really many mashups.
I mean, yeah, was it Gaga and Metallica?
Okay, Gaga
and
Metallica.
And you had Alicia Keys and.
Oh, they did the mashups. And they did, you know, my boy, you know, blues dude, with Stax Records dude. What's my man's name with the hat? Gary Clark.
I missed that one.
Oh yeah, that was dope.
Who was the mashup?
It was him and his old school Stax Records dude who won a Grammy earlier. Okay. But it was dope. It was one of those like Little Big Town day where they introduced someone, they did a song, and they introduced someone like Pentatonix did. It was also weird that Pentatonix was the only people to mention Al Jarreau. I thought that was weird. Of all the people, like Pentatonix was like, "We want to say something to Al Jarreau." Boom, boom, da, boom, 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 da. Anyway, I'm not mad. Marissa, you like Pentatonix? You like Pentatonix, right? That's your crew.
I do.
Oh, wow. I know. I'm not hating on Little Big Town or Pentatonix. They're very talented. There's something about them that like just doesn't. There's something they've had like about 100 makeovers, and there's still about 50 makeovers away from looking cool. That's all I gotta say. But I love them.
You going hard on them?
I'm
guys.
Sorry, Marissa.
Hey.
All right. Well, on that cheery note, let's get out of here. Where can the people find you?
Man, they can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Akili Shine, AKILISHINE.
Or find me on Instagram and Twitter at Joe K. Braswell. And it's great to be here. We'll be back next week with more Geek Nerd Tech. See you later.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us, info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagram me, at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
Hollywood Redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.